name is Luis Vasquez. I work with the United Auto Workers Health and Safety Department in Detroit, Michigan. And I'm here to just speak to you about a programmatic approach to providing safety and health training to Spanish-speaking workers using three examples of NIEHS grantees, NIEHS being the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, which provides grants to about 20 different entities, some labor organizations, universities, and consortia, and other groups. First, I have to give disclosures. I have no relationships to disclose. I'm not making any money off of this, no profit, et cetera. And yes, support for this presentation is provided by NIEHS under these grant numbers. The content is solely those of the authors and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the NIEHS or the National Institutes of Health. NIEHS encourages its grantees to share resources. One example of that is every couple of years, every few years, NIEHS puts on what we call a trainers exchange, where we get a number of trainers from and staff from each organization that is provided funding by NIEHS, and we have a conference where we show each other what it is that we're doing, what innovations that we're trying, and lately, in the last few years, especially, Spanish language training and education has been coming up as more and more of an issue, and so NIEHS has identified the Spanish-speaking community of workers as an underserved community and wants to support the grantees, its grantees, to address the needs of this audience. I work with the United Auto Workers in Detroit. United Auto Workers has represented workers in Puerto Rico since the 1960s. These workers come, by and large, from, we represent a lot of the government workers. They have varying levels of English literacy. And some are professionals, so we are able to address their needs. It's kind of an enviable position, you know, to have an audience of a potential audience of 20,000 people to serve, and we've made some great progress in the last few years. We have increased our training and activity in Puerto Rico, and as you can see, you know, over the years we've just continued to provide more training, more assistance. Some of this is, some of the training that we provide is, you know, very basic. We start off with health and safety committees, and if there's other needs, we have, as a for instance, we have one local we represent, it's the Environmental Quality Board, or the Junta de Calidad Ambiental. This is the Puerto Rico equivalent of the Environmental Protection Agency. And they have very specific needs for doing hazmat training. So in this last grant year, as a for instance, we provided two refresher training programs for hazmat. We filled up the classes. We had 40 people in each class. We also provided the first ever time that UAW has provided training, this kind of training in Puerto Rico. It was the 40-hour technician level HAZWOPR class, which is quite a significant. It's very significant for our union. As I mentioned, we also have had a lot of huge increase in technical assistance requests. Earlier this year, we experienced two fatalities in Puerto Rico, one at the Bacardi Distillery and one with the Department of Transportation. And prior to this, we had not conducted fatality investigations in Puerto Rico because there were no fatalities amongst our membership. But this year, that happened. So we've been addressing that. We also had a problem where there was some contaminated rice being stored improperly, and the school cafeteria workers whom we represent called our attention to it, and we have been investigating that. Puerto Rico is a very humid place, providing a lot of opportunity for things like mold, and we get a lot of calls over indoor air quality concerns. We also have seen skin rashes. We've gotten calls from the Department of Agriculture workers regarding pesticides and heat stress. Ergonomics is a huge issue. We also, whenever we get calls, we try and go and see the location just to see what's going on there. So we do training needs assessments and safety walkarounds. So that's all been increasing over the last few years. This article that appears in UAW's Solidarity magazine just shows what we're doing, and it highlights that local that I mentioned. This publication comes out bi-monthly. It goes to all UAW members and retirees. It has a circulation of approximately 1.2 million people. So, this is one way that we're doing outreach by highlighting the efforts that we're making and the concerns that we run across. This also exists online at www.uaw.org in case you're interested. The strategies and tools that we've been using at UAW to address these needs, we have provided translators during training programs, doing real-time translation, and recently we purchased some headsets, wireless headsets, and I'll talk about that in another slide. We have a program where we have about 30 worker trainers. We are recruiting bilingual worker trainers, people from the shop floor that provide training to their peers. We're also recruiting trainers, worker trainers from Puerto Rico. We're in the process of doing that and have ideas about, how to do more of that in the future and future grant applications. We use the small group activity method, which is an alternate method of training. Involving a lot of hands-on activity as well. We are also translating a lot of our training materials and involved in curriculum development. We produced a health and safety resources CD-ROM. I just cruised the World Wide Web, and any time I saw a resource that I thought would be very useful, I put it all into one place. And I think that's been very successful. UAW has an evaluation component at the University of Michigan, and they have translated our registration forms and evaluation forms or feedback forms into Spanish. So it makes it easier for Spanish speakers to tell us how we're doing. We've coordinated some of our training with the Puerto Rico OSHA. We've had instructors come in from Prosha, and they've provided training, especially in legal rights of workers, Puerto Rico, and that local that I had mentioned, that for the Environmental Quality Board, I was looking through their contract language, and it said that management was responsible for providing the 8-hour refresher classes and the 40-hour HAZWOPer, and I said, wow, this is great, that was a gold mine. Another major part of the UAW program is we do an annual conference where about 250 union members, delegates from all across the country attend. And we try and include Puerto Rico as part of the delegation, and we've been increasing the numbers of people that come to that program at Black Lake. And here's where we decided to purchase the headsets. In 2005, we had translators providing real-time translation during classes, rather than separate out the Puerto Rico delegates and doing Spanish-only classes. We wanted to keep them integrated into the whole program. We didn't want to have, you know, a separate but equal kind of thing going on. In 2008, the improvement that we made was we purchased these wireless headsets so that we only needed one translator and who would just speak, and the folks would have their headsets on during plenary sessions and during classes, and we got very good feedback from that. So we've been making some progress. I do need to talk about the other programs. This just last slide just illustrates that the message is getting out there. This came from a newsletter that was produced by the one of the locals in Puerto Rico that goes out to all the workers that we represent in Puerto Rico. Next, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Center for Construction Research and Training Program, another NIEHS grantee, who is addressing the challenges posed by immigrant workers in construction and training in Spanish language there. How does CPWR reach these workers? Well, you know, take into account that assumption. But also, I just wanted to point out rates of injuries and illnesses and fatalities. Between 1980 and 2000, the number of Hispanic construction workers quadrupled to 1.4 million, and I'm sure that's a lot more today. That's a huge audience to try and address the needs of. The rates of death are approximately 19 deaths per 100,000 construction workers, compared to about 14 deaths per 100,000 for all of construction. So we need to get out there and raise the floor so that, you know, if we improve if we address the needs of this Hispanic population, we're going to be raising all of our construction worker health and safety. One of the things that CPWR does is they also have a group of trainers, and they bring people in to talk about what the needs of the Hispanic Spanish-speaking population is amongst construction workers. They also bring delegations to the border to talk about issues regarding Spanish-speaking workers, why there is such a need, why people are coming from Mexico to the United States to work. And here, you know, here you have an example, which is just down the road, a few miles, where, you know, this should bring it home, you know. Does it regard a border? No. Lead will spread across borders. So we need to be making sure that we're also crossing borders with training, information, education. CPWR has been very active in trying to train bilingual health and safety instructors. I wanted to point to a report that was done in 2004 by Rutenberg and Associates, that their conclusion was that training is huge for the Spanish-speaking community. And the more you can do in the language, the better. And they have specific needs. They interviewed a number of Spanish-speaking workers, and they need training in OSHA construction, hazmat, confined spaces, scaffolding, respirators. And through the study, these Spanish-speaking workers pointed out that they really appreciated the respect and the concern showed by the unions in regards to addressing these needs. Next, I'm going to give talk a little bit about the UCLA LOSH program, the Labor Occupational Safety and Health program, where health is not for sale. There's in Southern California, workers in Southern California comprise 2/3 of the state's total workforce. Okay, it's all concentrated down here in SoCal. SoCal accounts for 69% of California's foreign-born population, and in some industries, such as garments, 90% of the workers speak a language other than English. That breaks down to about 80% of that segment is Spanish-speaking, and the rest are Asian and other languages. A very low percentage of that population has above a high school education. Now, how LOSH and UCLA have been addressing this: half of the LOSH staff is bilingual. Several are native Spanish speakers and foreign-born. Okay? LOSH has strong relationships with unions and community-based organizations, and educational activities are developed in and with the community. Okay? This is a very important point, is that you have to make sure that you are integrating your community. Okay, that you're getting, you have boots on the ground, in other words. And the way they do that is they, LOSH sends people out, and they'll do training on street corners with day laborers and such. It might include something like street theater or a 5, 10, 15 minute safety talk, whatever you can do to get out there on the ground in the community. They've also done training at the Mexican consulate. They have spent a lot of effort training health promoters or promotoras de salud, they talk about not just health and safety concerns at work, but what about at home and in the community, in collaboration with worker centers and unions, they support ongoing campaigns and just continue to build this capacity. LOSH is also heavily involved in translating materials and curriculum development. And once again, they're trying to integrate community concerns within that. And it's mainly, what is it? It's about translating culture, and to do that, with the Spanish-speaking community, you have to use innovative and alternate methods of education and training, and it's very important who is that face out in front of that community that you're trying to reach. It should be one who is of that community, if at all possible. Lessons learned: one size does not fit all. Each of our organizations has different needs and different audiences to address. And what we're doing in UAW is not going to fit with CPWR and vice versa. You need dedicated resources, people mainly. And you need to identify with the community. If you need more information, you can contact any one of us through these avenues. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Right here.
Yes, my question is for Nancy, too. I noticed in your findings and also in the findings of the CAMPI that there was a recognition of social, the environment where these workers were living in, and the fear and the marginalization and all of that. And I always try very much to bring that up whenever we're talking about culture, the issue, the economic issues and the social issues that shape culture and that even shape the process of migrating and then being here. So I was a little concerned to read that the title of your presentation says Safety Attitudes of Latinos, because then it's like, it's it kind of conveys that it's something about the way they relate to culture, but it just the way they relate to safety, but it doesn't take into account all these other social and economic issues. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're pointing out the hazards of trying to have a catchy title and wanting to play off the word salud. I think I did mention the web of causation, and clearly it's more than just the workers' attitudes. It's looking at employers. I ran into a dead end. We went to the law school. We were told that they work primarily on legal issues. They really weren't too interested in the workers' comp issues. We went to the Division of Workers' Comp. We provided them with corrected translations of their Spanish materials. They said they would consider them. We went to a lot of different bases, and we really then said, well, whom do we have access to? And it's the workers. So we'll start from there, find out how they view the world. But there's more work that has to be done. Obviously, getting people to understand their rights, that they can refuse going out on a girder, in 70-mile-an-hour winds on a high rise, is one thing. But who is ordering them to do that? And that's where I looked at the, cultural competency of the supervisors, the whole regulatory structure of Nevada OSHA, lots of different issues, and the fact that the people in power were blaming the workers. It was their fault they should be ticketed, rather than accepting responsibilities for themselves. So your point is well taken, but I think my catchy title might have caught me.
Other questions? Well, thank you very much. There are handout materials on the back. There's resources for the NIEHS training programs with the National Clearinghouse for Worker Health and Safety. All of our curriculum are available online in various different languages, so we hope that you'll be able to go online and check those out. And there's also a booth in the exhibition hall. And we have a couple of minutes, so if you want to ask individual questions to the presenters, you can come up right now. Thank you very much.